Welcome to St. Louis on the Air. I'm Don Marsh. It has been exactly 6 months since the shooting death of Michael Brown in Ferguson. The manner of his death sparked looting, arson, and turmoil in Ferguson, and more destructive protest demonstrations when a St. Louis County grand jury chose not to indict Darren Wilson. That's the white police officer accused of shooting Brown, an African American. There have been numerous incidents of civil disobedience since, as demonstrators have pressed their demands for ending racism and for social justice. So what has changed over the past 6 months, and what is likely to change in the months ahead? We'll put those questions to several people involved in the Ferguson story for the past 6 months. Joining me in studio, Emmanuel Berry, St. Louis Public Radio Race and Diversity and Culture Fellow, who has covered the Ferguson story from the very beginning. Gregory Carr is an educator who teaches theater arts at Harris Stowe State University, Florissant Valley Community College, and the University of Missouri-St. Louis. As I say, we'll be talking to a number of other people during the course of the program, but Emmanuel, I'd like to start with you.
Okay.
We listened to you on Morning Edition today and saw your fine post on our website today. One of the things that has struck me is the fact that a number of people that you have talked to say they were really surprised to learn of these racial injustice, diversity, problem issues that surfaced during this thing. Catch you by surprise?
Well, I guess not being from St. Louis initially, when I first came here, one of the things that I noticed was how essentially drastically different things were, that there were these divides and that for me they seemed extremely visible. And I think that's because I was coming in from an outsider, as an outsider. But in talking to people, I think it's because, you know, you live in your own world. It's easy to avoid here in a way because it is so separate and so divided. So for me personally, not necessarily something that I wasn't seeing, but I understand why in a way a lot of people didn't see it. If you're not interacting with different people from different social classes, different races, if you're not living near them, if you're not by them, then you wouldn't know in a way.
And Greg Carr, I guess that is a big part of the problem if folks are unaware of the divisive issues that separate them.
Well, this is true. And like I said, the last time I was here in December, many police officers policing the communities, they live in those communities. So if you're not from that community, you're not familiar with the cultural issues that go with it, and even as far as interacting. So those things can be challenges if you don't deal with that segment of the population.
Emmanuel, you've been in and out of Ferguson and that area for some months now, 6 months to be absolutely precise. What changes have you seen? What positive changes have you seen?
I think more than anything, the most positive thing is that people have changed in a way. They're not everyone, but I think that there is this new sense of awareness in that community. And although, you know, there are a lot of efforts and a lot of conversations taking place, and we all know conversations don't always necessarily lead to actual changes, as in, you know, policy. But at least people are talking about it now, and at least people are aware of it now. So I think that's definitely a positive change. But I think it's also a change that's only in some ways taking place in part of the community, in that part of the community that was unaware. I think if you go to the people who are living through these experiences of disparities every day, life hasn't changed that much. And they're living it, so they're not necessarily talking about it.
Greg Carr, you agree?
I agree. I think there are some positive changes. One of the things that I've made an effort to do is to go over and have lunch at least once or twice in Ferguson. I've had a chance to have lunch. I believe it's the Ferguson Hamburger Bar, and I've really met some interesting people there. And one of the biggest changes I've seen positively, and if we have to say that there are two Fergusons, there's the North Florissant Ferguson and there's the West Florissant Ferguson, which are very separate. And on the West Florissant side, I have a really good friend of mine, Adrian Hawkins, who's actually running for the city council. So I'm really excited that people encouraged her to run and she got the courage to run. So I'm looking forward to seeing some sort of change. And I think out of the six candidates, I believe four out of the six are African American.
What is the greatest change that's needed in your mind?
I think the greatest change that's needed in my mind are similar to what Emmanuel said, just really honest dialogue, and not just dialogue that doesn't go anywhere, but dialogue that has a plan. Let's put a plan in place and let's give it a timeline. Let's give it 6 months. Let's give it a year and put something on paper, because I heard a lot of talk in the Ferguson Hamburger Bar, and I think there were some individuals from the Billy Graham Crusade that talked with me, and I think actually had prayer with me. But it seems like people are coming in and going out, but the people are still there. They're still saying, hey, we need help. Can we get a plan in place? So I think we need plans in place.
Emmanuel, what about momentum? If the momentum that was initial following the shooting death of Michael Brown, has it diminished? You used the word sporadic demonstrations in your piece today.
They are sporadic, and they're different in a sense. In talking to some of the activists, some of them said, well, you know, we're not necessarily in the streets because we want to be at a table. We want to be at a table having those conversations and those discussions. So we're still in the streets, but you might not see us there as often. And I think in some ways the momentum is in different spaces. You know, we've seen that, you know, Ferguson was this starting epicenter, but we're seeing protests in other places across the country now. And we're also seeing activists, you know, who were here in different spaces across the country. So I think there is still a momentum, and there is still, you know, this pressure and these people who want to make sure that there are systemic changes and that things get done. But they're not necessarily doing that in the street as consistently.
But, you know, as the expression goes, we've seen this movie before. This has happened before in other places over many years. And the conversations start, and then something happens. They stop. The momentum is lost. And it doesn't happen again until there's another incident and the conversations start all over again. Your thoughts about that, Greg Carr?
Well, I think this is a little bit different now, Don, because we have the advent of social media now. And that, I think that may be one of those spaces that Emmanuel is speaking of, because if you go on Twitter or Facebook, there's a lot of conversations, a lot of planning that's going on. So I don't think it's going to be business as usual this time. So I was even watching the Grammys last night, and during the Grammys, the last song of the night was, I think, John Legend and Common, and Ferguson came up. Ferguson is one of the lyrics. So it is a nationwide movement, and it's also an international movement as well. So I don't think it's going to go away anytime soon.
Emmanuel?
I think I hate to say it, time will tell. But I mean,
very reporter-like of you.
I try. No, it is one of those things where, you know, we're going to look back a couple years from now and be able to untangle it and make more sense of what happened and what was actually accomplished and what wasn't. I mean, I think right now in this moment, there's still very much a pressure for things to continue and things to go forward. But it is one of those things where you don't really know what will happen.
Ferguson itself, the name, has become so symbolic. This is quite different from some of the other things that we can point to.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Correct?
I mean, I've heard people say, you know, that it's an adjective for exactly. for a bunch of different things now. Mm-hmm. It's no longer a suburb of St. Louis in a way. Yeah,
good point. I'm going to bring another voice into this conversation. We'll have several of them during the course of our discussion here this morning. Patricia Bynes is joining us. You've heard her before on this program. She's the Democratic Committee Woman for Ferguson Township. Patricia Bynes, so nice of you to be with us.
Oh, hi. Thank you for having me.
You know, the question of the day is, and it's being asked all over this area and probably in many parts of the country, is what changes have happened in the last 6 months in and around Ferguson and because of Ferguson? What are you seeing?
I have seen a tremendous wake-up call that has occurred for people everywhere throughout the world. And some people's wake-up call needed to be, I don't participate enough in the political system. Other people's wake-up call needed to be, I didn't know that these issues took place because they don't affect me in my everyday life. You know, this has been a learning experience for many people who not only live in Ferguson, but in the St. Louis area, and in this country, but around the world. So we've gone from wake-up call to right now I see us moving into action to work on the issues. Because, you know, to so many people, it wasn't just Officer Darren Wilson that shot Mike Brown. People see a system, an institution that killed Mike Brown, and that is what people are now focusing on. It's a tangled web, and people are working at one piece at a time at fixing what's wrong.
I know you're particularly interested, as you've indicated, in the political process. Do you see a greater tendency toward greater involvement now by more people and more people of color?
Absolutely. And the conversation has to just change from being black and running for office, because they are great people of all colors who can fight for equality. These are not just black issues. These are issues about equality. So right now, I think that people are paying attention to what's happening more in their city halls. They are finding ways to get involved, whether that's, you know, watching online, you know, live stream meetings, or trying to get in touch with people who follow local politics a lot more closely. But all we need is, I mean, all it takes is one, and it continues to grow and grow and grow, and people are really starting to see how important local politics really is in their lives.
Are you seeing that interest amongst younger people?
I am. They come and go. They don't have quite the attention span or the time that other people do, but the fact that it's on their radar, you have to work with people where they are. But I do see more younger people at least asking questions and wanting to know what's going on. And if that's what we have to work with, I'm going to meet people where they are, and we are going to build from there.
And you're trying to bring young people into the system as well, as I understand it, with your Spring Break volunteer program. That seems like a good way to get young folks involved.
Absolutely. I was approached by the NAACP, actually, out of Atlanta, who was working with students who wanted to come to the Ferguson area during their spring break and help do voter registration, help get the word out about the April 7th election. I think this is almost going to be like one of the most watched elections across almost the world, and people still want to be a part of this because there are some people who very much felt, they felt more connected to the protest piece. And then there's another group of people who feel more connected to the political process piece. So these are young people who are getting it and want to help be a part of that. And so I'm really looking forward to students. We open up the opportunity to students all over the country to come and do community service here, civic engagement, learn from other activists who are on the ground. And this is something that we can teach them, we can build together, and we can help move this throughout the nation.
Have there been any changes for the worse in these 6 months?
I personally feel like I've seen the best and the worst of all types of people over the past 6 months. And sometimes you need to see the worst to bring out the best. And I'm going to continue to hope that the good is going to prevail. So while that sounds really naive, I mean, for every reaction, there's a counter reaction. And that's pretty much what we're dealing with. But change isn't easy, and there's going to be some opposition. So we just have to stay focused.
Well, Patricia Bynes, I want to thank you so much for being with us and spending a couple of moments. I know it's probably going to be a busy day for you and a day of reflection for you, as it is for so many others on this anniversary. Thank you.
Thank you.
That's Patricia Bynes, the Democratic committee woman for Ferguson Township. Very, very quickly, Emmanuel, let me turn to you with regard to the visibility of young people today. What is your thought about the young people involvement in today's Ferguson world?
I think that there are, you know, when the protests happened, we started to see, I guess, what we can call leaders in some sense, like these people who were young activists. And for them, this activism isn't just like it stemmed in a way from Ferguson, but it's their lifestyle now in a way. And they're not necessarily on the street every day, but they're going to conferences to learn about activism and share what they've learned. They're investing kind of in a life of activism. And those voices are really important, because if we hear this a lot also about there being, you know, a generational divide between, you know, established organizations and these younger activists and trying to make sense and weave through all of that. But there's a presence there now. There's a voice there now.
Their energy is really needed at a time like this. Greg Carr, your thoughts on that?
I have, as an educator, I see this on campuses, and I freely engage my students in those conversations. And we have class discussions on those things. So, yes, the young people want to be involved. I think there is a recognition that there is a generational divide, something we saw at Harris Stowe on the Martin Luther King Day. We had somewhat of a protest at Harris Stowe, and we had some but it brought about conversations. And even though it appeared to be a very negative situation, something very positive came out of it. That one of the leaders of that protest is actually going to come to Harris Stowe, and we're going to have a roundtable discussion to find out what they need. And if you know, right now, Harris Stowe is like one of the centers. I think Dr. Womack, our new president, has established a nonviolent center that we're going to have people that come in, be kind of like a think tank. So we're very excited about that opportunity.
He seems like the right guy at the right time at Harris Stowe.
He is.
We're going to have one of those young activists with us in just a moment, but I do have to take a break. We're talking today about Ferguson, exactly 6 months, 6 months to the day after the shooting death of Michael Brown in that community. Back with our guests in just a moment. This is St. Louis on the Air on St. Louis Public Radio, 90.7 KWMU. Hello again and welcome back. We'll be continuing our conversation on the situation in Ferguson today, 6 months after the shooting death of Michael Brown. But before we do continue that conversation, here are some of the stories our St. Louis Public Radio newsroom is following today. A St. Louis Aldermatic Committee is convening again today to consider establishing a civilian oversight board for the St. Louis Metropolitan Police Department. This is the third hearing for a proposed bill that would appoint a 7-person board of civilians who would have authority to investigate claims of police misconduct, research police policies, and make recommendations based on its findings. There's been controversy over whether or not the board would also have subpoena power, something the mayor rejects. If the committee votes for the proposal today, it would then go to the full Board of Aldermen. And developers in Belleville are unveiling their plans today for a convention center, hotel, restaurants, and convenience store at the site of the Our Lady of Snow Shrine. The Belleville City Council has yet to approve the plans, but if it does, it would clear the way for construction to start this spring. Some of the tenants include a small brewery and a 130-room hotel. You can learn more about these and other stories this afternoon on St. Louis Public Radio and throughout the day at stlpublicradio.org. Now back to our conversation about Ferguson, 6 months after the shooting death of Michael Brown. With me in studio is Emmanuel Berry, who is a reporter here at St. Louis Public Radio, and Gregory Carr is with us. He is an educator. We're going to bring into the conversation now someone who's been on the program a number of times. Jonetta Elzey was active in demonstrations in Ferguson after Michael Brown's shooting. She has since left that community and is now with Amnesty International in Chicago. She joins us by phone. Jonetta, nice to talk to you again.
Hi, how are you?
We're doing just great. Thanks for being with us. What are the folks at Amnesty International saying about Ferguson on this anniversary?
We're just trying to amplify the voices of those folks who are out on the ground. So the protest that happened today at Mayor Slay's home, I personally have been retweeting a lot of the action photos and the list of demands. But I know that Amnesty just wants to amplify the voices of those who are still in the fight on the ground.
You have not been out of the community for all that long. How do you assess where we are now based on your involvement there from the very beginning?
I think that we are at a pivotal turning point. Like you said, people aren't, or like someone said earlier, I've been listening, that people aren't necessarily in the streets every day anymore, but there are still things that are happening. So the civilian oversight board, the meeting that's happening right now, I have a few people that I know who are personally there and live tweeting what's going on with that. It's still, you know, we're still at a stopping point in a way, because today is the 50th anniversary of Martin Luther King meeting with Lyndon B. Johnson about black voting rights. And, you know, it's the same topic 50 years later, which proves to me that it must be voting and disruption, voting and accountability, voting and having these systems change. Because if it was just voting about voting rights and that's it, the meeting 50 years ago would have been it. You know, like that would have been a way to change the culture and the environment that would have even made Michael Brown and Darren Wilson would have never had the encounter that they had on August 9th if it was just about voting rights.
Do you have any sense, Jonetta, that momentum has been slowed at all? You mentioned kind of stopped a moment ago.
No, I don't think the momentum has stopped at all. I think that people are, instead of being out and getting tear gas every day, everyone has regrouped, and people are seeing what lanes that they want to be in, and some people do want to protest every day, and they do. Some people want to go to the city council meeting. Some people want to go to the committee of public safety meeting. Some people want to build coalitions and think further and farther than just Ferguson. How can we fix this nationally? And some people just want to work locally. So I think everyone has figured out their roles and are moving in them very well, if I may add.
So you think we're in a pretty good spot right now, I take it?
I do. I think we're doing good for right now, because who knows what this summer is going to be like.
Well, as someone said just a few moments ago, only time will tell. Janetta Elsie, thank you so much for being with us. Hope you have great success with Amnesty International in Chicago, and come visit us when you come back down.
I'll be back next weekend. Thank you, Don.
Thank you, Janetta Elsie, who has been active in the Ferguson story since the very, very beginning. Anything you guys want to respond to here in studio with regard to what Janetta had to say? Great, Carr?
I think one of the things that I think she was mentioning was legislation and putting some things in place. And I think it's good timing that the federal government has sued the municipalities of Ferguson and Jennings regarding the ticketing of individuals and the excessive use of fines and things of this nature to pretty much oppress people. And it's interesting because I live in North County, and I just find this very, very interesting that on any given Saturday night, there are so-called sobriety checks set up. But I very rarely see breathalyzers. I only see police officers pulling people over, checking for a driver's license and registration. And at one point in time, I've actually seen three tow trucks ready to tow cars. So it seems like this is a cottage industry. So the fact that these municipalities in North County are being sued by the federal government, I think that is some positive change.
We hope to be talking to our State House correspondent, Marshall Griffin, in a very short period of time with regard to what's going on in Jefferson City in that regard, with regard to legislation. Anything you wanted to add, Emmanuel, before I go to Marshall?
What Janetta was saying about, you know, people finding their lanes and finding their roles, I think that is something that's important to note, that, you know, there are different kind of sectors in this activism that aren't necessarily everyone's out in the street every day, or, you know, people find where they fit and what feels right to them. And I think that's something Patricia Bynes is also getting at with, you know, people more comfortable with the voting and that sort of activism.
It's not a one-front war.
Yeah.
Yeah. Marshall Griffin, our State House correspondent, is with us, I understand. Marshall, thanks for joining us.
Thank you.
Well, we've talked in the past since the session began that the Ferguson story is going to be a big one in Jefferson City. How is it unfolding as far as you're concerned in terms of proposed legislation?
Well, it's not a big story as far as – well, I mean, it is a big story, but as far as being an actual big concern or a big high priority among the Republican leaders, they're not so much. They've actually gone to efforts to downplay – the whole issue, as far as their, you know, with House Speaker John Deal saying that there is not a quote unquote Ferguson agenda. Now, that being said, one particular bill that's considered to be perhaps the highest priority is actually making a good bit of progress and could actually see floor debate this week.
That would be the court reform fines,
yes,
and fees.
Yes, that would be yes, the court reform bill under Senator Eric Schmidt. It has gotten committee approval, and after checking this morning when I came in, I saw that it is now on the Senate perfection calendar, which perfection means first round approval, basically. And it's the third item on that calendar, which means it could come up as early as this evening or perhaps tomorrow. It depends on whether they want to take them in order or skip around. But I would say there's a very strong chance that this bill could undergo first round approval sometime this week, possibly even today.
Stay with us. I just want to put some questions to folks in studio about that. Emmanuel, this seems to be target number one with regard to the concerns that have come out of the whole Ferguson story.
I think so in some ways. Well, in some ways it is, because it's something that's tangible and fixable in a way, whereas there are other things that I think are major concerns about the way that Black lives are treated that are that's harder to legislate. Sure. But yeah, because this is something that impacts everyone, this is something we're seeing everywhere, and it's something that I think most people can agree on is not a fair practice. So the fact that, you know, this is actually one of the first things that could actually become a law, become legislation, makes sense.
And Greg Carr, this is exactly what you were talking about a moment ago.
And not only was it something I was talking about a little while ago, actually one of my classes that I taught a small group communications class 5 years ago. We visited the ACLU as a field trip, and we came up with some of these same findings in 2010. And one of the group's topic was racial profiling. And we just found some amazing information. So I'm excited because now we're going to get a chance to qualitatively and quantitatively put some numbers on paper so you can see the effect.
Marshall, what are they talking about? Is it still the discussion, the legislation they are discussing, putting a 10% cap, total revenue generated by these things in various communities, putting the cap at 10%? Is that correct?
That is correct. 10% across the board, yes.
It's 30% now.
30% now. This would lower it to 10%. And the reason for that is a number of instances and reports where some towns have violated the 30%, and perhaps the mindset that 30% still allows certain municipalities to still, you know, make a good living off of traffic citations.
Well, let me put this to you, because we had a program at the end of last week right here on St. Louis on the Air, in which we had the mayors of Cool Valley and also of Normandy talking about this issue, both very, very much concerned about the amount of revenues they would lose. They are so, so dependent on this revenue to run their communities that they think it would be a disaster if this legislation passes. Are you seeing any kind of lobbying in this regard down there?
Well, there's lobbying going both ways on this, and I can tell you, I sat in on the committee hearing for this bill and heard the testimony from more than one mayor. They were very concerned about what this was going to do for their budgets. You know, the supporters of the bill were saying, well, it's more important to make sure that people don't get trapped in this cycle of debtors' prisons than it is for, you know, the mayor of a town to have a very expensive chair, office chair or office furniture because of ticket revenue. But these mayors from some of these communities pushing back, saying, well, you know, the traffic citations also fund, you know, programs for, you know, for women caught in the cycle of domestic violence and other, you know, real needs of that nature, and that funding could be in jeopardy if this bill becomes law. That was the message.
Emmanuel?
I mean, I think in a way what this speaks to is the sheer number of municipalities in the St. Louis area and the fact that there aren't enough resources. If your government has to be funded by ticketing, then that's an issue.
There are certain inefficiencies when you have so many police departments, so many fire departments, and so much duplication.
Yeah.
Yeah. Greg, thought?
And there's also a quota system. And there, I have a family member who works and was retired from law enforcement, and he even blatantly said that there are some officers who need to make quotas, otherwise their jobs are in jeopardy. So there's a pressure, an undue pressure on them to get these quotas, and then the municipalities benefit from this. But my question is, why not bring in other companies and other ways of generating revenue?
Marshall, is this going to pass?
This bill, I think it will. I think it will at least get out of the Senate. And I also think that the House version will pass as well. Now, the House version is sponsored by Representative Jay Barnes from Jefferson City, another fairly high-ranking Republican in the legislature. Now, his bill, I'm trying to look that up right now. I don't believe it's had a hearing yet, but it's because of the sponsor, I would imagine that it will at some point get a hearing, or perhaps maybe they'll just maybe the House leadership has decided to see where the Senate bill goes and just to work on that version once it crosses over. But I, of all the bills that would fit uh, the, that would fit the quote-unquote Ferguson agenda, this one has the best chance of actually making it to Governor Nixon's desk.
Yeah, we had done a program prior to the start of the legislative session, and some of your colleagues, the political reporters here at St. Louis Public Radio, said that basically they didn't expect anything to pass regarding Ferguson.
The bulk of them, yeah, the general consensus was that it would be very hard to get most of these bills. I mean, there's some that won't go anywhere. There's a proposed constitutional amendment to do away with grand juries. I don't see that one going anywhere. I think it'll be stuck in committee. But this traffic citation bill could affect generally everybody, not just the people who have really been victimized by it. So this might have the chance of actually becoming law.
All right. Well, Marshall Griffin, thank you so much for being with us. Back to work now, and keep us up to date, as I know you will, on this particular piece of legislation and all others that come across your desk.
Thank you, sir.
Thanks so much for being with us. Marshall Griffin, our State House correspondent in Jefferson City. Quick thoughts from you too, Emmanuel. The fact that the Ferguson agenda doesn't look like it's going to get a lot of attention in Jeff City.
And I think that's something I kind of talked about in my piece right now is that, you know, right, it's a lot of talking and there are things proposed, but it doesn't necessarily amount to things actually changing yet because it is in this discussion phase, which is why I think, you know, it's activists think it's still important to be active, to keep that momentum, to keep that pressure.
And there is what we call the rural-urban divide in Jefferson City, and that's likely to come into play. Greg Carr?
Well, I think even if there's not a Ferguson agenda, I think there's a Ferguson effect, because even if things don't go the way we'd like for them to change in Ferguson, people are definitely looking at North County and saying there's something, the system's broken, and there's something that needs to be done because there's a systemic problem in North County.
I wonder if some sort of consolidation is in the offing. I mean, that's really looking into a crystal ball, but the term does pop up from time to time.
90 municipalities, Don. 90. In St. Louis County alone, that's way too much. If you go to Chicago, there's Chicago and there's Cook County, and we have St. Louis, we have St. Louis County.
Right.
So we're operating in an outdated system.
Have to take another break. We'll do that now. We'll come back with Willis Johnson. You know him because he's been on this program on a number of occasions. He's the pastor at the Wellspring Church in Ferguson. He'll be with us in just a moment as we continue our discussion about Ferguson 6 months after the shooting death of Michael Brown. This is St. Louis on the Air on St. Louis Public Radio, 90.7 KWMU. Hello again and welcome back. We'll be continuing our conversation on the situation in Ferguson 6 months after Michael Brown's death in that community. We have a couple of folks who have called in, and I'd ask you to be patient. We'll get to your calls in just a moment or two. But first, I want to bring into the conversation Willis Johnson, the Reverend Willis Johnson from the Wellspring Church in Ferguson. He joins us by phone. Emmanuel Berry is still with me in studio. Our friend Greg Carr had to leave because he's a teacher and he's got a class, as I understand it. So that's where he's off to, but we thank him for being with us. Reverend Johnson, thanks so much for being with us.
As always, thank you.
Nice to talk to you again. Our subject today is change. What, if any, change have you seen in Ferguson during the last 6 months, positive or negative?
Well, obviously, there's some greater attention and at least emphasis on concerns and challenges that have been longstanding in this community and surrounding communities. And yet, much of what has given rise to the challenges, the crisis, a system, its leadership, and a culture that has been unresponsive and at times disrespectful and underrepresented has not changed. We still have a mayor that's still in his seat, a city manager who is still in their position, a chief of police. That is still leading an organization that is less than stellar, and a community that is still probably as, if not more, divided than ever before.
How do you see the clergy's role, the church's role, in affecting the kind of change that you want, that you're talking about here?
Well, I mean, obviously, I'm biased and hopeful that we across denominations, connections, experiences could be the example that we espouse and seek to be. But I think, you know, at times I think it's almost sometimes unrealistic to think the church in and of itself is going to challenge history and systems and cultural practices that in many respects at times we either benefit from, help to create, or we further perpetuate. And more so, it's hard to expect or think that leaders in communities like churches are the chief thinker or doer. There are many in this community and in many other communities where leaders, while they may have very ardent and sincere and earnest wants and desires to change and help their congregations change, these are men and women, individuals who represent or who come from the very communities that sometimes perpetuate or who have helped to foster a lot of what is not right and healthy and loving in our community. So I think it's more than just simply us coming together and praying or espousing our respective texts. It's a lot of hard work, and it's going to take a lot of effort from everyone.
We talked earlier in this program about the role of young people and the energy that the young people have to affect change and seemingly becoming more involved and have been since Michael Brown's death. Quite frankly, is the church connecting with young people? Are you?
Well, we like to think that we have and that we are, and I think we've done our part, and we continue to extend our hearts, our hands, our resources to that. I think we also have to be respectful to the fact that the mode and the means and the methods are diverse, and I don't think we have to maybe change our orientation, meaning the church, that, you know, membership does not necessarily constitute relationship, that someone does not have to necessarily be a member of our church to benefit or for us to be concerned or interested in their development. I think that also movements and individuals within movements have to realize that it's all hands on deck. We're going to have to do conventional and non-conventional things. We're going to have to use established practices and organizations just as much as we need to be innovative and be expansive in our work. And I think it continues to be an ongoing dialogue and challenge among across constituencies, but particularly among youth, young adults in the church. And more so, not necessarily just the church. I mean, let's just be honest. People don't come and talk to my, you know, few hundred or so members. And no, the church is represented, you know, chiefly through my actions and the support which I'm able to offer. And so, we're going to have to continue to build and rebuild bridges. I think there's less that divides us than we perceive.
What are you looking for in the next 6 months?
Oh, some change. I mean, we have an opportunity for everyone who is despondent and disappointed in the leadership of not only our specific community, but the larger municipality or area we have an opportunity in this next election cycle. I know people say, well, you know, what is voting change? Well, I don't know in and of itself does it change everything, but it's a mechanism, and it's definitely something that can and will happen in the next 6 months that will speak to at least public response to what they have considered to be a lack of leadership responsible management and concern in this community. I hope that the broader context of what is being identified as a movement in social action among groups becomes a lot more organized and cohesive, whether that's the coming across barriers of youth and the young at the heart and the young in spirit with the establishment and established organizations meeting up with some of these new emerging grassroots organizations. I hope that particularly in the area of community development and nonprofit development that many of the big the big entities will actually particularly come and make sure that they are infused and truly invested in Ferguson. It is very discouraging continuously to hear people reference Ferguson and plot land, programming, and positioning in and around it, but not in it. And so if this is to be a boilerplate and a template, I hope that we will find that infusion, not just of resources, but then allow from this place the transformation and the exampling to emanate for the benefit of the region.
Well, Willis Johnson, I want to thank you so much for being with us. And it's always a pleasure talking to you, and I'm sure we'll have the opportunity to do that in the not-too-distant future. Thank you, sir.
Well, thank you.
Right. I'd also like to point out that we reached out to the mayor of Ferguson, Mayor Knowles, to be with us on this program, but got no response from the mayor's office. What do you think, Emmanuel, from what you've just heard from Reverend Johnson?
Well, in covering Ferguson, I've also have talked to a lot of people in the church and covered a lot of what the church is doing. A couple weeks ago, Metropolitan Congregations United held this big event where people from different congregations all over came for what they were calling sacred conversations about race. And that was a really interesting event because it got at what Johnson was talking about in regards to the church realizing in its own place within that system and sometimes that it played into the system and some of the systemic inequalities that exist. So I think the church is really I think they're examining their role and their place and trying to make sense of, you know, what can I actually do, and also understanding where they fit in to the system.
One of the things I think many of us noticed immediately after the Brown shooting was the fact that churches were very active, but you had older ministers with older congregations getting together, and although the words were right and the message was right, the concern was that message getting to the street where the energy was?
I don't know that it is or that it did. I think it's possible for some people and in some cases, but I think that is a hard gap to overcome.
Yeah. That's that generational thing again that comes into play. I want to take a call or two before we get into the business side of the Ferguson aftermath. Let's bring in Jeff, who's calling from St. Louis. Jeff, go ahead. Thanks for waiting.
Hi, thank you. I'm curious to know, I've heard some discussion about in the wake of the Ferguson crisis, training for police that involves education regarding implicit bias.
Whoops, I think we just lost Jeff. Sorry about that. We'll try Lorenzo. And Lorenzo, are you there?
Hello?
Yes, Lorenzo, go ahead. You're on the air.
Thanks for taking my call. Great show. I find it hard to be optimistic about change when you see the same usual suspects appointed to committees and boards. I come to think of a program you had last summer, Don, where you had the director of Focus talking about how she served on 35 boards all at once. And I'm thinking, how can somebody do a diligent job on any one of them? And I think that the establishment tries to hog up seats on boards and committees, and that really prevents it from the kind of change that your guests are talking about.
All right.
So I would like to see future appointments to boards and committees limited to people who only serve on one other board.
All right. Well, thanks so much for the call. I'm trying to recollect the gist of that Focus conversation with Chris Chadwick. I don't believe she was saying that she was on 35 boards at once, but I know she's served on at least 35 boards over the time of her career. I'm sure that's not something you've given much thought to, Emmanuel.
Not quite.
But I understand his concern. When you spread yourself thin like that,
how can you actually commit?
How can you? We have another caller we want to bring in now, and this would be John Zisser of Zisser Tires in Ferguson. It was targeted in violent Ferguson protests after the Michael Brown shooting. John Zisser, thanks so much for being with us.
Thank you.
Well, let me get your perspective on changes you've seen or wished you had seen in these past 6 months. I know you had a bad couple of weeks, at least, after the Michael Brown shooting.
Yes, we've had it's taken its toll on us, to say the least. You know, but the neighborhood itself is pretty much back to normal as far as a neighborhood with 9 burned out buildings to the south and 2 to the north as well as can be expected.
Well, we have been reading that business generally has been down in Ferguson. Has your business been impacted that way during these months?
Well, it's been impacted, you know, to the tune of, you know, on any given day, 30 to 50% off.
That's pretty significant, obviously.
Obviously, it's taken its toll. You know, we've lost a few employees over the whole situation, and it's just been tough overall. All the businesses.
Why stay?
I own the building. You just can't leave. At least it's not very profitable to leave at this stage, but you never know.
We understand that there is a lot of the business is down because there's fear. People are reluctant to come from outside that community because they're afraid. Is that something that you've sensed?
Yeah, I think they're just afraid of the area. You know, if people come in town, the first thing they want to see is, let's go see Ferguson. Mm-hmm. And, you know, they're like, well, you know, where's all this stuff I saw on TV? And, you know, the neighborhood, it's really no different than it was, you know, 5, 7, 10 years ago as far as just the neighborhood itself goes and the in people. You know, there's nothing going on there except normal life these days.
What,
not like it was.
What changes would you like to see? We're talking about change today. What changes would you like to see in the months ahead?
Oh, I'd like to see Jay Nixon get his head out of the sand and actually do something instead of our experience with him bringing the guard in and then never deploying them on the scene and just let the looters and the arsonists have their way and throw all the police and first responders under the bus and let the protesters shoot at them. And we're really lucky we don't have any dead police officers or firefighters on our hands.
But presumably that part of the story is over. What specifically would you like to see the governor do now?
I like to come in and see what he do what he said he was going to do and rebuild the area and basically put some effort towards the damage that has been created under his administration with his policies of do nothing. And, you know, all the promises that were made to the residents, the businesses, the police, all broken, all just, I don't know, is a broken promise a lie? Or not. If your kid told you a broken promise, you'd say that your kid was a liar. So, you know, the governor has it on his back, and all he's done is left us standing dry with his head in the sand.
Boy, I sense a lot of anger in you, John Zezer.
It is when I get on that subject. You know, I mean, it's just aggravating to have someone make all these promises to the people of North County, Ferguson, Bellwood, the police, and then just go the other direction and not say a word in regards to this poor decision. It's sad. It's really sad that we have a governor like that.
Do you think you speak for your fellow businessmen in Ferguson, for a good portion of them?
I would say I speak for a lot of the businesses and a whole lot of the police and firemen that in their position really aren't in a position to say anything.
Any final thought you'd like to leave us with? I know you've certainly committed to what you've just said, but anything else you'd like to add about what you'd like to see?
I'd like to see, you know, people come back and, you know, Ferguson is a safe place in Bellwood and West Florissant area and basically just come back and shop and, you know, if you need some tires, come see me. If you need some a bakery item or you need lunch, you know, visit one of the other businesses that are in the area. The neighborhood is safe. It might be safer than a lot of neighborhoods these days. So things like that happened up on West Florissant can really happen anywhere. So it's not just West Florissant that is that's had problems. And the whole city of St. Louis is going to have problems for years to come with this whole situation kind of plaguing the city. So come back. Life needs to get back to normal.
Yes, it does indeed. John Zisser, thank you so much for being with us. I think I placed your firm in Ferguson. Is it in Ferguson or Delwood?
We're actually in Delwood.
All right.
We're on the West Florissant side.
All right. Sorry for misidentifying that. And hope business comes back to you. Thank you, John
Zisser.
Thank
you very much.
Just a few seconds left, Emmanuel Berry. Do you want to put a cap on this? What's your final
thought?
Put a
cap on this. I mean, like I said earlier, it is and only time will tell, but I do feel like there's a sense of people wanting things to go back to normal, but there's also a sense that people can't go back to normal and that things shouldn't go back to normal. Because it would be nice in a way. I get that feeling and I get that understanding, but at the same time, things can't go back to normal because Ferguson is Ferguson now, and also because there's a need for change.
Because obviously a lot of people weren't satisfied with what normal was.
Yeah.
Emmanuel Berry, thank you so much for being with us.
No problem.
Nice job on your reporting, by the way. You've done a terrific job for
thank
us.
Thank you.
Tomorrow on St. Louis on the Air, we'll talk to pediatrician Ken Haller about the importance and safety of childhood vaccines. Archived versions of past St. Louis on the Air programs are available for download or podcast at stlpublicradio.org. St. Louis on the Air is a production of St. Louis Public Radio, 90.7 KWMU. Thank you so much for listening. I'm Don Marsh.